Court will proceed to the fourth case of the morning, the United States versus Gonzalez. Cecilia?
May it please the Court, we are here asking this Court to reverse the District Court's granting of the defendant Christian Gonzalez's post-trial motion for judgment of acquittal. In granting the defendant's motion, the District Court disregarded evidence, including agent testimony, wiretap evidence, and video and photographic evidence, and failed to draw all inferences in favor of the government when it conducted its analysis. Turning to the District Court's opinion, the District Court addressed in its opinion a meeting that was held at the Marshall's store between the defendant and his co-defendants on December 11, 2010. And in its opinion, the District Court found that the meeting was not secretive and, in fact, stated that there was no indication at all that the defendant and others were looking out for other individuals. That finding was directly contrary to evidence presented to the jury at trial. At trial, Special Agent Stephen Fisher testified about surveillance he conducted of the meeting. And he testified that he observed the defendant and his co-defendants, Javier Vera and Carlos Quintero, meeting in the housewares section of this department store where Carlos Quintero was gesturing and talking. He then testified about a fourth individual who was later identified through process of elimination as another co-defendant, Miguel Cordova, conducting surveillance of the meeting and looking around the area to observe the meeting as well as other individuals in the area. Agent Fisher also testified that the defendant himself essentially conducted surveillance after the meeting began and after Miguel Cordova joined the meeting. The defendant moved to the women's section of the department store, where he appeared to be watching the group and looking around, and that's what the agent testified to. So contrary to the District Court's opinion that there was no indication at all that the defendant and others were looking out for individuals, there was direct evidence in the form of agent testimony, and that evidence allowed the jury to infer knowledge on behalf of the defendant, that the defendant knew what was going on with the drug operation and knew that there was a need to maintain secrecy and to avoid detection by law enforcement. In its opinion, the District Court also concluded that the meeting wasn't secretive, and that conclusion failed to take into account wiretap evidence, showing that the meeting was set up not so that the defendant's four men could meet in the housewares section to go Christmas shopping, but to meet so that they could avoid being detected by law enforcement and discuss the next phases of the drug operation.
Did the wiretap have on, it might have been there, I just missed it, did it have on where they're going to meet or just the purpose of the meeting?
The wiretap discussed both the purpose of the meeting and then the location, in the sense of they were going to meet originally in a Lowe's parking lot at the Brickyard Mall. And Agent Fisher testified that he observed one of the co-defendant's vehicles, Javier Vera's vehicle, meet up with another vehicle identified as Carlos Quintero's vehicle. From there, he observed Carlos Quintero go into the Marshall store and then observed this meeting there. In the District Court's opinion, the District Court also failed to consider all the evidence when it found that the reasonable interpretation of the defendant's activities on December 14th was that the defendant was taking a smoking break from work. The evidence at trial showed that the defendant and his co-defendants were peering out of the warehouse on December 14th from time to time, looking out and scanning the parking lot, observing to the north and to the south. And a highly trained special agent, Jeffrey Thiers, testified to his observations along those lines. Contrary to the District Court's opinion, there was not testimony that the defendants were smoking or that they appeared to be chatting or taking breaks. They were standing in the threshold, looking out, and by the agent's descriptions, conducting surveillance. The District Court, in its interpretation of the events on December 14th, also failed to take into account what was going on inside the warehouse. The defendants were working on a funnel device and constructing cardboard boxes for the purpose of extracting something, and we know it was bricks of marijuana, from the super sacks. Those super sacks came from Mexico. There's a veil of secrecy surrounding this whole operation. And so it's consistent with that evidence that the defendants were conducting surveillance from the threshold of the door, looking out to ensure that no one else was around, no one else would happen upon the operation. In its opinion, the district court also failed to view all the evidence in the light most favorable to the government. The district court notes that the defendant working on the sifting machine or the sifting devices and constructing cardboard boxes alone don't show that the defendant had knowledge of the drug operation. But that's viewing the evidence in a very narrow manner and viewing it essentially in a vacuum. The district court was required to consider all of the evidence that was presented at trial. And that included the fact that the defendants were preparing with this funnel device and with these cardboard boxes to extract bricks from sacks. The bricks were hidden inside the sacks, not on top, not on the sides. They were hidden inside bags shipped from Mexico, labeled made in Mexico, and all of this done under a veil of secrecy. The district court, in the opinion it rendered, also failed to address all of the evidence from December 15, 2010, and that evidence showing that the defendant had knowledge of the illegal drug operation. And the district court also failed to view that evidence in the light most favorable to the government. The district court, in its opinion, focused on the defendant's post-arrest statement and claims that the defendant made that he was asking what was inside the super sacks. Those statements, when viewed in the light most favorable to the government, show that the defendant had knowledge of the operation of the drugs inside the super sacks, that the defendant knew exactly what he was doing. And he was essentially trying to talk his way out of a bad situation when he was speaking with the agents. The district court, in focusing on the defendant's statements about asking about the super sacks and the contents, failed to really address the other portions of the statement in which the defendant tells provable lies to the agents. For example, the defendant says to the agents that the auger machine that arrived on December 15th already contained powder, and with the purpose of trying to explain to the agents that the defendant had no knowledge of how the bricks that were later found in the warehouse came out of the super sacks. But videotape evidence, poll camera evidence, shows that when the auger arrived on December 15th, it was empty. The defendant's statement to the agents after his arrest also contained a host of evasive answers and non-answers to very direct questions. And it also contained various admissions about the defendant's knowledge prior to his arrest. For example, the defendant, when asked, after you saw the bricks laying on the floor, what did you think then? The defendant saw bricks in the back of the warehouse on December 15th. The defendant responded, "I still think it was yay," meaning cocaine, and he explained he thought it was cocaine. He also told agents that after discussing with Zilarian Ruiz, one of his co-defendants and one of the bosses of the operation, how Zilarian Ruiz had ordered the warehouse door closed after the warehouse owner, Mr. York, came around the load on December 15th, the defendant stated to the agents in his videotaped post-arrest statement, "That's when I knew." So the defendant had clear admissions to the agents and the district court did not consider those statements in rendering its opinion. The district court also focused on the fact that the drugs were not readily recognizable as drugs. You didn't see bricks of green leaves being pulled from the sacks, but rather bricks that were encased in a clay bonding. But as you know, circumstantial evidence can prove knowledge, and in focusing on the fact that you couldn't actually see the marijuana, the district court viewed the evidence too narrowly. In addition to the other circumstantial evidence that I've spoken about, the fact that the bags came from Mexico, were hidden in sacks, and the defendant was being directed by individuals who came from Mexico, speaking on two phones.
You want to reserve some time for a rebuttal?
I do, Judge. I would just note that the defendants were concerned about the warehouse owner coming around the sacks, which shows the obvious nature of what they were doing. So in failing to consider the evidence as a whole and viewing it in light most favorable to the government, the district court erred, and we'd ask that you reverse this decision.
Thank you, Ms. Cecilia. Mr. Schumann?
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. My name is Anthony Schumann. I appear on behalf of defendant Christian Gonzalez. Your Honor, the appellate court should affirm the district court's ruling granting defendant Gonzalez's post-trial motion for judgment of acquittal. The trial judge did not this motion was argued before or at the end of this case, the government's evidence, case in chief. It was also argued at the end of the case, both in writing, both orally. We refiled as a post-trial motion, and then the judge understood, I guess.
You the trial? I was
the trial attorney. But at that time, it seems as though the government is arguing that the judge can't change his mind.
Now, he ruled at the close of the government's case, though, right?
He did. He ruled at the close of the government's case, and he denied the motion.
He didn't reserve on this, did he?
He did not reserve. And then he denied again, Your Honor, to be honest, at the end of the case, although defendant Gonzalez did not put on any evidence or a case in, or a defense case. However, after the case was over and we filed the motion on a post-trial motion, he reviewed the case, I believe, more carefully. This was a conspiracy.
You mean he had second thoughts?
He did. And I think he listened to me, finally. And it was a complicated case from the standpoint, judges, that it was not a conspiracy case with just one defendant. It was a conspiracy case with three defendants sitting at the table. All of them were somewhat similarly situated. Statements came in different ways. One co-defendant statement came in only orally. One came in without any written statement or audio statements at all. But Mr. Gonzalez's statement, which was very telling, was 2.5 hours long. The agent who interviewed Mr. Gonzalez testified that she was a Homeland Security agent trained in methods and techniques of interrogation, utilized those methods and techniques of interrogation, and interviewed Mr. Gonzalez for 2.5 hours. Mr. Gonzalez made statements over and over again that he was suspicious. He was curious of what was going on.
Would you also say that his statement was very inconsistent? Sometimes he said something clearly, and sometimes he didn't say them so clearly, or he sort of used my term, hedged his bets a little bit on how he wanted to answer it.
Well, you could say that it was inconsistent, Your Honor. I believe that you have to take it in context. It was a 2.5 hour statement. This agent is continually asking him questions about certain knowledge. She is trying. It's clear in the statement. She is trying to get him to say that I knew. And sometimes he would agree with her and said, well, yeah, thinking back on it, I knew this. But on the other hand, and then he would come back and say, no, I didn't know what it was. I was curious. I was suspicious. And I asked one of the co-defendants. I asked another one of the co-defendants. I asked a person that was there. I looked into some of the super sacks to see if there was something in there. He was on the scene for almost 2 weeks. It wasn't until the very end that the co-conspirators, the ones that were above him, made a decision to go further. All Mr. Gonzalez's role was initially was to take the super sacks off the rail cars and put them in the warehouse. The meeting that they that the government raises, one of the purposes of the meeting was to discuss with them the payment of money for the work that they had done the week before. If this was a meeting that was in secrecy, why would they hold it in a department store or at a mini mall? I think the trial court reviewed he did not view the evidence narrowly. The trial court viewed the evidence, or he addressed individual issues of inferences, and he decided that the inferences were not reasonable. Taken as a whole, putting them together, the jury can consider inferences, but those inferences have to be reasonable. And taking all these inferences together, those inferences have to result in a finding of sufficient evidence to convict beyond a reasonable doubt, not mere speculation.
What about that evidence which indicated he was aware or was concerned about the landlord, and he wanted to warn his fellow?
That was early on in when he was just moving the super sacks from one where there was no evidence at that point, no evidence at all through the wiretaps that any of the co-defendants, not just Gonzalez, but any of them had any knowledge of what was in the super sacks, or had even gotten to the point of doing something with the funnels or the augers. The gentleman who turned out to be the owner of the warehouse came in, asked questions. Mr. Gonzalez called him up and said, there was a guy here asking questions. As Judge Cannelli ruled, that was something normal that an employee would do if he was working alone and if someone were to ask questions.
But whether it's
was
normal,
to call his boss.
Whether it's normal has a lot to do with the circumstances going on. I mean, you can look at it one way and say this is normal. Look at it another way and say, no, it's not normal. It's like having the meeting at the Marshals, which I wouldn't see to be particularly normal, but sometimes you see this thing, best place to have a secret meeting is in plain sight. You can look at both these things depending on how you read the evidence, either for the defendant or for the prosecution. I'll be right about that.
You're talking about the evidence as a whole or just the evidence?
The evidence as a whole,
it could be possibly weighed one way or another, and you could raise inferences. But those inferences in and of themselves must be reasonable. You cannot pile inference upon inference, particularly in a conspiracy case, particularly of a case of this nature. There was no direct evidence that Mr. Gonzalez knew of what was going on after he unloaded the larger super sacks off the train. He was arrested on the 15th. What the government argues concerning him seeing some bundles, he did say that he saw some bundles. He didn't know what they were. He didn't know. He could not identify what was inside the bundles in any way. There was no evidence that anybody told him what was in the bundles. And it was on the day, hours before, he was arrested. So even if he did see something that may have, at that point in time, made him more suspicious, more curious, or more afraid and wanted to remove himself from what was going on, he didn't have that chance because agents arrested him that day within hours.
Didn't he ask, though, regarding the bundles, is that yo, whatever it was, yo being with cocaine and
Didn't he ask
somebody that and they said don't worry about it or whatever?
No, he didn't ask. He asked what was in – he asked about the bundles, and the old man walked away and did not answer his questions. But again, Your Honor, this is on the day within hours of his arrest that he said that he saw that, and that occurred. So, Your Honor, I believe that in closing, I believe that the court did look at the evidence in a light most favorable to the government, that the court believed that the inferences were many, but putting together in the totality of the circumstances were not sufficient to prove Mr. Gonzalez guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. And as the court said, it was what they led to resulted in the jury having to speculate as to what Mr. Gonzalez's knowledge was of the bundles and his knowledge and intent to join the conspiracy. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schumann. Ms. Cecilia? Do you have any time? No time? You may have 1 minute.
Oh, thank you, Judge. And I realize I used most of my time on my opening statements. I just have one brief response point. Defense counsel just noted that the defendant's post-arrest statement had multiple inconsistent statements and that you needed to look at it in context. First of all, it was the job of the jury to weigh the different statements made by the defendant and draw competing inferences and make a conclusion about what to take from that statement. It was the jury's role to make those determinations, not the district court. And on review, it's the district court's job to draw all inferences in favor of the government. So to the extent there are more favorable inferences to be drawn, those should be drawn in favor of the government. Thank you, Judge.
Thank you, Mr. Schumann. The case is taken under advisement. And